Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, science fiction from Exploring Tomorrow later on, but first it's X-1 with the story Lifeboat Mutiny, an NBC broadcast from the 11th of September, 1956.
Countdown for blastoff. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
This week, the police chiefs of the country are meeting in Chicago for the 63rd annual conference of the International Association of Chiefs of Police. Tonight, X-1 is proud to salute them as we present The Lifeboat Mutiny by Robert Sheckley.
We should have known better. In a way, we were asking for it, but frankly, we were short of credits, and beggars can't be choosers. As a rule, I don't like second-hand equipment, not if I have to trust my life to it. But Joe, the interstellar junk man, can be pretty persuasive. He has an air of confidence when he walks down between the rows of antique jalopies on his lot and pats an airlock door lovingly or kicks at the ground gyros to show how firm they are. Joe exudes faith the way trees drip sap in the spring. And if you get too close, a little rubs off on you.
Yeah, you see, solid as a rock. Look at that plating. I'm telling you, this boat is a real buy.
She looks pretty old.
Sure, she's old.
Now, don't give us that story about it belonging to a little old lady who used it to flip to church on Sundays.
Now, look, boys, I'm not trying to unload something on you. I don't stand to make a nickel on this, but tell me the truth. Did you ever hear sweeter engines? And look at those servos.
Pretty old.
And that hull. I bet it's 500 years old and not a spot of corrosion on it. I'm telling you, you're lucky. It's a coincidence, you two fellas coming in. You need a lifeboat. And sitting right here waiting for you. Like you was made for each other. Is this baby.
She certainly does seem rather nice. What do you think about it, Nick?
It does look pretty good. It's about what we need for the ocean survey work on Trident. But you know Joe.
They just don't build them this way anymore. Look at that propulsion unit. You couldn't do it with a trip hammer. And note the capacity of the cooling system.
It looks good, but some of these old machines, you know, I just want to make absolutely sure it's safe.
Safe? Safe. He asked me if it's safe.
Is it?
Now, step inside. Go ahead. Step inside. All right. Push that button. Right there on the instrument panel.
This one?
Hey.
I am Lifeboat 324A.
Hey, the darn thing talks.
Yeah, and in English, too.
It's equipped with a universal translator. It's completely automatic. I told you, they just don't build them this way anymore. Go ahead. Push the button again.
I am Lifeboat 324A. My primary purpose is to preserve those within me from peril and to maintain them in good health. At present, I am only partially activated.
Could anything be safer? This is no senseless hunk of metal. This boat will look after you. This boat cares.
I don't know. The idea of an emotional machine always gets me. I can't even stand those robot maitre d's. They keep slobbering over you every time you go into a restaurant with their tubes just pouring kindness and consideration.
Ah, you're a reactionary. We'll take it.
You won't be sorry. Boys, you just bought yourselves a lifeboat.
Joe delivered this assurance in the frank and open tones that had helped make him a millionaire several times over. It wasn't that he was dishonest. Far from it. All the flotsam he collected from anywhere in the universe worked. But ancient machines often had their own idea of how a job should be done. They tend to get peevish when forced into another routine.
Well, there she goes, lifeboat 324A. I got her down in the afterhold. I think she's in perfect condition. You know, it's just what we need for those oceans on Trident.
I hope so. The last thing I bought from Joe was an electric razor. Only it turned out that it came from Deneb 3, where they are slightly reptilian. And an electric razor is used to help them change their skin in the hot months. If you remember, I was in the hospital 3 months, and after the skin grafts, I don't know my ears from my elbow. The job we were on was to survey the planet Trident for a real estate speculator who bought it for subdivision. Trident was about the size of Mars, but with a far better climate. There was no native indigenous population, no poisonous plants, and no germ-borne diseases. As a matter of fact, apart from one small island and one small polar ice cap, the entire planet was covered with water. There was no real shortage of land. You could wade across some of Trident's several seas. Our firm had been hired to survey and plan a little mountain raising because the sector council frowned on selling building lots under 4 feet of water. We landed on Trident and launched the lifeboat.
Okay, I got the sandwiches in the water. Ready to cast off?
Aye, aye, sir. All mooring lines are on board.
All right, let's crank this swan boat up and get going.
Well, push that button.
Aye, aye.
I am lifeboat 324A. My primary purpose is to preserve those within me from peril and to maintain them in good health. At present, I am only partially activated. For full activity, press button 2.
Well, there it is, right next to the first one.
Well?
Nothing's going on back there. Sounds like motors warming up. Hey, that sounds like a short circuit somewhere. You know there's no wheel on this thing?
Oh, wait a minute. There's got to be some kind of tiller or control.
Well, you look. That's all there are, two buttons.
Well, then maybe she controls telepathically.
I'll try it.
Hey, 324A, go ahead slowly.
Ah, there she goes. That's it.
Starboard a little.
Wait a minute. I still don't like the sound of that. I bet there's a short somewhere. I'm going down to look for it with a circuit tester.
Don't louse anything up. I like a boat that works this way. It gives me a sense of power.
Hey, 324A, full speed ahead.
Arnold disappeared into the bilge with a circuit tester, and I handled the survey. Actually, our machine did all the work, tracing the major faults in the ocean bottom, locating the most promising volcanoes. When the survey was complete, the next stage would be turned over to the subcontractor. He would wire the volcanoes, seed the faults, and touch the whole thing off. After that, there'd be enough dry land on Trident for anybody. Now, by mid-afternoon, I figured we could knock off for a while. We ate our sandwiches, took a drink of water from the canteen, and then had ourselves a swim in Trident's clear, green water.
Hey, give me a hand up.
That was very refreshing.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to get this grease off with sandpaper, but I think I found the trouble. You see, the leads to the primary activator have been removed and the power cable's been cut.
Well, why would anyone do that?
Well, it might have been part of the decommissioning, and I got it hooked up now. Go ahead, hit the second button. Might as well have this thing working right.
Okay, here she goes.
depot 324A. I am now fully activated and able to protect my occupants from danger. Have faith in me. My action response tapes, both psychological and physical, have been prepared by the best scientific minds in all Drome.
Ah, that's more like it, huh? Gives you a feeling of confidence, doesn't it?
I suppose so. But where is Drome?
Gentlemen, try to think of me not as an unfeeling mechanism, but as your friend and comrade in arms. I understand how you feel. You have seen your ship go down, cruelly riddled by the implacable Hagen.
What ship? What's it talking about?
You have crawled aboard me, dazed, gasping from the poisonous fumes of water. Half dead.
Oh, no, wait a minute. You mean that swim we took? You got it all wrong. We were just surveying.
Half dead, shocked, wounded, morale low. You were a little frightened, perhaps. And, well, you might be. Separated from the Drome fleet and adrift upon an alien planet. A little fear is nothing to be ashamed of, gentlemen. But this is war. And war is a cruel business. And we have no alternative but to drive the barbaric again across space.
There must be a reasonable explanation for all this.
Probably an old television script got mixed up in its response bank.
We better give it a complete overhaul. We can't listen to that stuff all day.
Well, we're about a quarter of a mile from the island. Ah, I'll tell you what. I'll take it down and clean the goo out of the contacts when we get there.
Hey, what's going on?
We're stopping. Hey, lifeboat.
Quiet. Calm. Trust in me. I am scanning the island.
What's he talking about, scanning me?
Better humor him. Lifeboat, that island's okay. We checked it personally.
Perhaps you did. But in modern lightning-quick warfare, Drome senses cannot be trusted. They are too limited, too prone to interpret what they wish. Electronic senses, on the other hand, are emotionless, eternally vigilant, and infallible within their limits.
But there isn't anything there.
I perceive a foreign spaceship on the island.
Oh, that's our ship.
It has no Drome markings.
Well, it hasn't any enemy markings either. I painted it myself.
In war, we must assume that what is not ours is the enemy's.
Oh.
I understand your desire to set foot on land again, but I take into account factors that a Drome motivated by his emotions would overlook. Consider the apparent emptiness of the strategic bit of land, the unmarked spaceship put temptingly out for bait, the fact that our fleet is no longer in this vicinity.
All right, that's enough. Now, I'm tired of arguing with you. Go directly to that island. That's an order.
I cannot obey that order. You are unbalanced from your harrowing escape from death.
All right, enough of this nonsense. I'm just going to take that cutoff switch and...
Come to your senses, gentlemen. Only the decommissioning officer is empowered to turn me off. For your own safety, I must warn you not to touch any of my controls. You are mentally unbalanced. Later, when our position is safer, I will administer to you. Now, my full energies must be devoted towards detection and escape from the enemy.
Where are we going?
To rejoin the Drome fleet. As soon as I can find it.
We sailed over the empty seas of Triton for the rest of the afternoon and far into the night. At about midnight, we sat in the cabin sharing our last sandwich. The lifeboat was still rushing madly over the waves, its every electronic sense alert, searching for a fleet that had existed 500 years ago upon an entirely different planet.
Why didn't I pack more sandwiches?
Did you ever hear of these Dromes?
Yeah, vaguely. They were non-human, lizard-evolved creatures.
Mm.
Yeah, they lived on the sixth planet of some little system near Capella. The race died out over a century ago.
Mm-hmm. And the Hagen. What about them?
Also lizard, same story. Mm. Wasn't a very important war, you know. All the combatants are gone except this lifeboat, apparently.
And us.
We've been drafted as drone soldiery. Do you think we can reason with this, Tubbs?
Oh, no, I don't see how. As far as this boat is concerned, the war is still on. It can only interpret data in terms of that premise.
It's probably listening in on us now.
No, I don't think so. See, it's not really a mind reader. Its perception senses are geared only to thoughts aimed specifically at it.
Yes, sirree. They just don't build them this way anymore. Oh, I wish I could get my hands on Joe.
Well, you know, it's actually a very interesting situation. The machine is acting very logically upon no longer existent conditions. Therefore, you could say that the machine is the victim of a systematized delusion.
You mean the lifeboat is just plain insane?
Well, I believe paranoia would be the proper designation. Ah, but it'll end pretty soon.
Why?
It's obvious. The boat's prime objective is to keep us alive. Our sandwiches are gone, and the only other food is on the island. I figure it'll have to take a chance and go back.
Gentlemen, at present, I am unable to locate the drone fleet. Therefore, I am turning back to scan the island again. Fortunately, there are no enemies in this immediate area, so I can devote myself to your care.
Oh, you see, it's about time you got around to us. We're hungry.
Feed us.
Of course. Immediately. There you are. On the tray.
What's that?
That looks like clay.
Oh, it smells like machine oil. Hey, what's it supposed to be?
That is geezel. It's the staple diet of the drone people. I can prepare it in 16 different ways.
Try it.
All right. It tastes like clay coated with machine oil. We can't eat that.
Of course you can. An adult drone consumes 5.3 pounds of geezel a day and cries for more.
Now listen, we are not drones. We are humans, an entirely different species. The war you think you're fighting ended 500 years ago. We can't eat geezel. Our food is on the island.
Ah, yes. Your delusion is a common one among fighting men. It is an escape fantasy, a retreat from an intolerable situation. Gentlemen, I beg you, face reality.
You face reality, or I'll have you dismantled bolt by bolt.
Threats do not disturb me. I know what you've been through. Possibly you've suffered some brain damage from your exposure to poisonous water.
Poisonous? To drones.
If absolutely necessary, I am also equipped to perform physical brain therapy. It is a drastic measure, but there can be no coddling in time of war. You see? You need not worry. All my scalpels are razor sharp and ready for immediate action.
Oh, scalpels, huh? Well, we're feeling better already. That's a fine-looking batch of geezel, isn't it, Arnold?
Oh, delicious.
Nothing is too good for our boys in uniform. Do try a little.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, that's delicious.
Good. I am moving toward the island now, and I promise you, in a little while, you will be more comfortable.
Why?
The temperature here is unbearably hot. It is amazing you haven't gone into a coma. Any other drone would have. Soon I'll have it down to drone norm of 20 degrees below zero. And now I'll play our national anthem.
Should be very comfortable. Drones live at 20 below zero. We're drones and no back talk.
Those cooling tubes are all frosted up.
Yeah, I just wrote my name in frost in the porthole. Hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I got an idea. Just follow my lead.
Why not? Lead on, fellow drone.
Give me the canteen.
What are you doing?
Just gonna get a little exercise. Gotta stay fit, you know.
That is true.
Here you are, boy. Catch.
Look out, that canteen's heavy.
Just throw it right back, boy. Just heave it right in. Come on, let's see your curve.
Be careful with that receptacle. It's filled with a deadly poison. Water.
Oh, we'll be careful. Here we go.
Bad shot, old man.
Oh, how careless of me. I seem to have broken the cooling tubes. Cooling fluid all over the floor.
I should have taken precaution against internal accidents. It won't happen again. But the situation is very serious. I cannot repair the cooling cube myself. I'm unable to properly cool the boat.
Say, that's tough. Now, if you'll just drop us on the island...
That is impossible. My first duty is to preserve your lives. And you couldn't live long in the climate of this planet. But I'm going to take necessary precautions to ensure your safety.
What are you going to do?
There is no time to waste. I will scan the island once more. If our drone forces are not present, we will go to the one place on the planet that can sustain drone life.
What place?
The southern polar ice cap. The climate there is almost ideal. 30 degrees below zero. And of course, I must guard against any further internal accidents. So, I will lock you gentlemen in the cabin.
Think. I am thinking. Nothing's coming out.
We've got to get off when he reaches the island. It'll be our last chance.
Now, look. We know his internal scanning isn't very good. When we reach the island, maybe we could cut his power cable.
Oh, you couldn't get within 5 feet of it. He's got an electric charge on all the controls.
I am now scanning the island.
Place looks fine today.
Oh, sure does. I'll bet our forces are dug in underground.
They are not. I scan to a depth of 100 feet.
Well, under the circumstances, I think we should examine it a little more carefully.
It is deserted. I cannot let you endanger your lives by going ashore. Drome needs her soldiers, especially sturdy, heat-resistant types like you.
We like this climate.
Spoken like a patriot. I know you must be suffering. But now I am going to the South Pole to give you veterans the rest you deserve.
Wait a minute. You don't understand. We're operating under special orders. We weren't supposed to disclose them to any vessel below the rank of Super Dreadnought. We're a suicide squad.
Yes, yes, that's right. Especially trained for hot climate war.
Our orders are to land and secure that island for the drone forces.
I didn't know that.
You weren't supposed to. After all, you're only a lifeboat.
Land us at once.
I couldn't guess, you know. All right. We'll head for the island.
Arnold, it's going to work.
Why not, as long as we tell him the truth?
The beach is only 50 yards away.
No. No.
No what?
I cannot do it.
What do you mean? This is war. Orders.
I know, but I cannot obey. A different type of vessel should have been chosen for this mission, but not a lifeboat.
You must think of our country. Think of the barbaric Hagin.
It is electronically impossible for me to carry out your orders. My prime directive is to protect my occupants from harm. That order is stamped on my every tape, giving priority above all others. I cannot let you go to your certain death.
You'll be court-martialed for this. I'll have you broken down to a dinghy.
I regret to say I must operate within my limitations. I must take you to the safety of the South Pole.
Listen, you crazy tin can. Let me at those controls.
Please, do not attempt any more destruction. I know how you feel.
Wait a minute, Arnold, old friend. Since we cannot accomplish our mission, we cannot ever again face our comrades. Death before dishonor. Hand me the canteen.
No. Don't. That's water. It is a deadly poison. Don't. Don't.
too late. Arnold, it's your turn.
We, who are about to die, salute you. We die for glorious Drome. That goes for me, too.
Speak to me. Speak to me.
Lie still, you idiot.
There is no known antidote. If only I could contact the hospital ship. Speak to me. Are you still alive? Answer me. Here. Here. Perhaps if you eat some Giesel. Dead. 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 I will now read the burial service. Great Spirit of the universe, take into your custody the souls of these your servants. Although they died by their own hand, still it was in the service of their country, fighting for home and hearth. Judge them not harshly for their impious deed. Rather, blame the spirit of war that inflames and destroys the spirit of all Drome. And now, by the authority vested in me, by the Drome fleet, and with all reverence, I commend their bodies to the deep.
Ow!
Shut up!
Accept them, O ocean, for many brave hearts are at slumber in the deep.
Float quietly. What's the lifeboat doing? It's still hanging around.
Just pray the Drones didn't believe in cremation.
Sleep quietly, brave spirits. I will now play the Drone national anthem.
Well, there she goes.
Where?
To the South Pole. To wait for the Drome fleet.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features The Man Who Ate the World by Frederick Pohl. This is the story of a civilization which flowed with milk and honey, and of a man whose tragedy was that he had not drowned at birth. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you The Lifeboat Mutiny, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Robert Sheckley and adapted for radio by Ernest Kenoy. Featured in the cast were Leon Janney, Mandel Kramer, William Redfield, and John McGovern. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
X-1, on Tuned to Yesterday, an episode from NBC, heard on the 11th of September, 1956. You are listening to an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. In just a few moments, an episode of Exploring Tomorrow, with a story penned by Robert Silverberg, an author who had several of his stories adapted during radio's yesteryear, no less than five on the Exploring Tomorrow series, with his debut happening on December 19, 1957, where an adaptation of his story Double Dare was featured on X-1. Here's an excerpt of the broadcast.
Our ship sat down on the planet Domerang right on schedule. Kermage and I stood at the viewport and watched the big Domerangi official cross the field to our landing ramp. He was dressed in a bright yellow tunic, green-gray buskins, and was wearing a glittering jeweled diadem. He was walking in that ponderous way those people always walk. And it seemed like a long time before he actually reached the ramp and climbed into the ship.
Welcome aboard.
Greetings, gentlemen. I see you have come through the trip in fine shape. My name is Plovash. I'm your liaison while you are with us.
My name's Marner. Pleased to meet you.
And I'm Kemmerich. Well, what happens now, Plovash?
You have landed at a spaceport just outside our capital. I have come to take you to your quarters. We are providing you the finest accommodations our planet can offer. We want your working conditions to be of the best.
Glad to hear it.
The actual test will begin as soon as you wish. May I offer you good luck?
Oh, we won't need it. It's not a matter of luck at all. It's brains. Brains and sweat.
Very well. This is what you are here to prove. It ought to be amusing in any case, whatever the outcome may be.
The whole weird deal had begun back on Earth. And it started where most arguments like this start, in a bar. Kemridge and I are top engineers back home, and when this visiting Domerangi made a few cracks about our civilization being second-rate in technology, we made a few choice remarks about his own technology. Well, the thing got to the news agencies and created quite a stir. It finally led to a regular interplanetary controversy over who had the best technical brains, Earthman or Domerangi. So, here we were, Kemridge and I, sitting in an alien hotel room millions of miles from home, staring glumly at the walls.
Well, we're here, Marner. We're here. And we're going to show them up and go home rich and famous. You got that?
Oh, I hope we can show them.
Well, we've got to. Between the two of us, we can match anything they throw at us. Well, can't we?
Sure, sure we can.
Hmm. Now, just look at this door mechanism, for instance. A simple cybernetic mechanism.
Yeah. Ordinary gadget. Not nearly as efficient as our kind, either.
That's just the point. Apparently, these Domerangi aren't half the sharks they think they are. We said we could duplicate anything they showed us, right?
Yeah. And they've got two of their engineers on Earth trying the same stunt.
Okay, so if our boys stick them and we dope out everything they throw at us here, we've won. The State Department's counting on our versatility, Miner. That's all we need. Versatility, cleverness, and hard work.
Yeah, we'll beat those silly-looking pants right off them.
An excerpt of Double Dare penned by Robert Silverberg on X-1 from December 19, 1957. Now a complete story of his featured on Exploring Tomorrow called The Moon is New from January 22, 1958 on the Mutual Broadcasting System.
The program you are about to hear is fiction, science fiction. We make no guarantees, however, how long it will remain fiction.
Exploring Tomorrow. Now here is your guide to these adventures of the mind, the editor of Astounding Science Fiction magazine, John Campbell, Jr.
The scene is a missile testing base somewhere in the continental United States. The time? 2:30 on a Tuesday afternoon, 5, maybe 10 years from now. A rather unusual missile is getting worked over. Blast-off is 10 minutes away, and the countdown is in its last stages. And a man is sitting inside this missile, waiting. The United States is about to make its first attempt to send a manned rocket to the moon.
9 minutes to blast-off, Captain. Still feel loose and easy?
Like a bird, Colonel, waiting to be cut loose and sore. How do you feel?
Me, Captain? I've been sitting here in the observation tower. You're the one in the launching pad. You're the man going to the moon.
And you're the one who has to face all the reporters after blast-off. Me, I'm glad I'll be up there alone. How much time left, Colonel?
6 minutes, 20 seconds. Let's run through the schedule one last time.
Okay. I sit in this cradle and I wait for the rockets to toss me up into space. I get 500 seconds of 4G acceleration. Then I sit around and look out the viewport for the next 4 days while the ship coasts in 0G free fall. I'm roughly 8 1/4 minutes past 4. On Sunday afternoon, the autopilot is going to turn the rocket engines on again, long enough to land me in the Oceanus Procellarum, which better be as dry as the Palomar boys say it is. I climb into my little Jim Dandy spacesuit, wander around the moon for a while, take some snapshots, pick up a couple of rocks as souvenirs. And 13 hours after landing, I get back into my ship and I come home. Did I leave anything out?
Not a thing, Captain. 3 minutes, 10 seconds.
Well, all I do is sit here and wait anyway. Computer down below in the belly of the ship does all the work. Me, Mike Wellman, first man on the moon. Maybe, anyway.
What do you mean, maybe? The ship's been tested thoroughly. There's no possibility of...
A blow-up? No, go ahead. Don't be afraid to say it. I wasn't talking about that. The odds are pretty good that this bird is going to get me there. Only thing I'm wondering about is whether someone else is going to get there ahead of me. I'd hate to find a big vodka party going on when I get there.
90 seconds. They're clearing the launching pad, Captain. We better break contact now. Good luck. The next time I hear from you, it's going to be from space.
Sure, Colonel. I'll report as soon as I'm in free fall. Then radio messages every 4 hours. You won't forget about those baseball scores, will you?
Scores. 30 seconds, Captain. And all America is rooting for you.
And I'm rooting for the Dodgers. So long, Colonel. See you next week when I get back.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, mark.
Launching base, how do I come in?
Clear and sharp, Captain.
Oh, glad to hear it. Okay, ship's time, 1,452 hours. Blastoff went fine from this end. I got through acceleration good enough. 4 G's isn't much fun, but I don't mind it in 8 minute stretches. The ship's in free fall now, no gravity at all. And it's weird, all right. Even after all those hours in the training chamber, I still feel a little strained. Very quiet up here. Nice. Man really can think here. The view is really something. Where do you see the photos?
How about the psychological reaction? You don't feel cut off?
Me? A guy whose idea of heaven is being alone with some books? Colonel, I like it up here. The psych test said I was an introvert, didn't they?
Well, not really. Just sort of solitary-minded.
Same thing. Well, it's us solitary-minded people who are going to be your spacemen, Colonel. We don't mind the loneliness. Listen, Colonel. How are the cosmic ray readings coming through?
Perfect. All the equipment seems to be functioning.
Including the pilot. Or rather, the live cargo, because that's all I really am. Okay, Colonel. I got a few odd jobs to do on board. And I'll be talking to you again in 4 hours. Over. Here I am again, Colonel. 2 days out, still no sweat. I'm getting used to this no-gravity business. And
now,
I go
on with the rest of the report, Captain. There's been a change in the operational plans.
Huh? What kind of change?
You want landing on the moon. Pentagon orders are for you to adjust the computer to alternate course B. Circle the moon and return to Earth without landing.
Hey, wait a minute, sir. How come the switch?
Well, it's an awkward situation, Captain. You see, between the time I last spoke to you and now, the Russians... I know this will come as kind of a shock to you. The Russians made a successful landing on the moon.
No!
Radio Moscow announced it 2 hours ago. And since then, we've picked up broadcasts from the Russian ship. They've landed, all right.
They beat us to it. By 2 stinking days, 2 days earlier, and I would have been the first.
You haven't heard the worst part of it yet. The Russians have claimed the moon.
They what?
Like Columbus claiming the Western Hemisphere. We're putting up a yell, of course, but there just isn't any precedent for this kind of thing. The UN is meeting to decide whether they have any right to.
So this is why I can't land, huh?
The Russians say they'll regard any lunar landing as trespassing on their property. We can't risk an incident, of course. So for the time being, we're going to hold back and wait till the legal aspect of this business is worked out.
So I can't land. They send me up here and I ride around for a week and don't even put my foot down on the moon. Uh-uh, Colonel. Russia doesn't own the moon, no matter what they say.
Captain Woman.
I'm sorry, Colonel. I'm more than halfway there, and I'm darned if I'm going to miss my chance. I'm going to land, sir.
Well, then, listen to me. You can't disobey orders.
Yes, I can, sir. I'm landing. Over and out.
It's not that the moon wasn't meant for man. It's just that man was never designed for the moon. It's a fantastically inhospitable place. Harsh, blinding sunlight with no atmosphere to dim it. Jagged shadows The rocks are hard, sharp-edged. There has been no weathering to soften them, and the shadows are just as hard and black. It's not a nice place to be, alone. Or even when there's only one other human being within 200,000 miles.
I don't know if you want to hear from me again, Colonel, but I'm beaming this anyway. Look, I just wanted to let you know that I've landed on the moon as originally scheduled. Yeah, right on the nose, in the designated landing area. Northern branch of the Oceanus Procellarum. And you can tell the Palomar fellas that they were right all along. Maybe this was an ocean once, but not in the last million years or so. As for the Russian ship, it isn't any hoax. I saw it when I came down. It's about 50 miles north of here. Maybe later I'll break out the rocket sled and wander over there for some vodka. The Russians are trying to contact me now. I better shift channel, see what they want. Over, Colonel. Come on in, Ivan.
Да, нет, товарищ, ничего.
I'm afraid that uses up my Russian vocabulary, Ivan. How's your English?
I am Captain Dmitry Novikov, Solid Space Forces. You are illegally trespassing on our property, American.
I am, huh? Say, your English is pretty good, but your politics isn't. You say the moon is yours, huh? Lunar Soviet Socialist Republic? I'm sorry to disagree. Just getting here first doesn't give you the right to claim the whole place, you know.
The matter has been considered by our legal experts. We have established prior claim. I am under orders to request you to leave Russian territory immediately.
But this is cockeyed, claiming the whole moon. Now, look here, Dmitry, let
you will address me as Captain Novikov.
Okay, now look here, Novikov. The moon's a big place, and there's room for a lot of us up here. It really isn't fair to want to hog the whole thing yourself.
The Presidium said Soviet policy, not space pilots. I'm instructed to warn you that you are trespassing. I do not wish to debate the matter with you.
So I'm trespassing then. What are you going to do about it?
My ship is armed.
And you can't figure out any better way of celebrating the conquest of space than starting a war about it?
The United States ordered you not to make a landing. They recognize our claim. We cannot tolerate violation of our rights.
You're going to be nasty about it, I see, huh? Well, I'll take my chances. Now I've got some work to do before I go back. I'll be leaving the moon in 14 hours and a bit. Hey, how long are you staying up here? You've been here better than 2 days already. You planning to hold the fort forever?
My plans for departure should not concern you.
Well, I'm just curious, that's all. Okay, Dmitry. Maybe I'll be talking to you again soon. And yeah, you, sneaky son of a gun. Congratulations. You did get here first. Over. Come in, launching bay. You hear me?
We're getting you, Wellman. We read you.
Look, I just had a little chat with the Ruski. There seems to be only one of them. He gave me some malarkey about firing on me if I don't clear off the moon right away.
Wellman, you insubordinate idiot, you're liable to touch off a war over this moon trip.
Well, what was I supposed to do? Smile politely and turn back just because they got here first? You think they have any right to claim the moon?
Of course not. That's not the point. You were ordered not to risk trouble by landing.
Yeah, and I landed anyway. Well, go ahead. Chop my head off when I get back to Earth. Meanwhile, I'm here, and if that Russian doesn't blow me up, I expect to do a little exploring in the next 14 hours.
I don't think the Russian's going to blow you up. He's got his own troubles.
What do you mean?
Well, we've decoded some of the messages he's been sending back to Moscow. Seems he made a faulty landing and has to make some repairs on his ship. It may take him a week or two, and he doesn't have enough food. Russia may be crowing about claiming the moon, but it's going to look bad for them if their spaceman can't get back and starves to death.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be rough. Maybe I better call him back and see if I can help him out.
Well, then leave him alone. He's a Russian.
He's a human being. And so am I. Get off the wire and let me call him, Colonel.
I order you not to make any overtures to that Russian.
Look, I'm not on Earth now. There doesn't need to be a Cold War up here, too, Colonel. And I have plenty of food to spare. Give the folks back home my love. I'm going to call Ivan again.
It's one thing to make a claim, to say, this is mine. It's something else to hold on to it and make the claim stick. Somewhat like the colonel. It was a little difficult for him to enforce the orders he was trying to give to the man on the moon.
Novikov, you getting me?
You have 3 hours to leave Russian territory. Then I must commence action.
Now, look, don't give me that stuff. I know your ship's disabled and you're in trouble.
This is untrue. My ship is in good condition.
Dan Trotsky was Rasputin's brother. You know, Novikov, I sometimes feel I'm the only sane man in a world of lunatics. Those idiots down there in Washington didn't want me to land because it might make Moscow sore. And you don't want any help from me because I'm not a good Marxist. It's a losing battle, Dmitri. Everyone seems to know what he really wants, and yet everybody tries hard to get the opposite.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. You just sit tight. I'm going to launch the rocket sled and get over your way with a couple of cartons of provisions. If you won't take food from a lackey of Wall Street, that's your business. I'm coming over anyway. Get that helmet off. Hello, Novikov. My name's Mike Wellman.
Why have you done this? What trick are you playing?
Listen, friend, all I'm doing is bringing some of my spare food. Nothing up my sleeve at all.
I do not understand that. Up my sleeve?
It's a decadent capitalist idiom. Means I'm not trying to fool you. The supplies are out on the rocket sled. Get into your suit and let's bag them in.
I said I would fire on you. And you bring me food?
Silly, isn't it? But they told me they picked up your messages to Moscow. That you were going to be stuck here a few weeks for repairs.
I was not telling the truth.
Hmm?
This ship will never take off again. The rear rocket tubes are hopelessly crumpled. The fuel field lines are severed. It was a very poor landing. I gave incorrect data to the computer.
And you told them you could fix it?
They do not like to receive news of failure. Leave me alone, American. Take your food and go away.
Hey, what are you going to eat? Rocks? There won't be a rescue ship up here for a month, at least.
There will be no rescue ship for me. I do not deserve rescue.
You'll just sit up here and starve to death?
I made the faulty landing. I cannot return to my country now.
And I disobeyed orders. I wasn't supposed to land because the moon is red property now. But the only Russian here is stranded, helpless.
Do not mock me.
I'm not. That's a fine bunch of spacemen you and me are. You smash up your ship, and I disobey half my orders. But I'm glad I disobeyed anyway. At least there'll be one practical result of my trip. I'll be saving a man's life.
You?
Sure. You're coming back with me to Earth. We can jettison some of the meters and stuff and make room for you. I bet you don't weigh more than 150. We can manage.
Sure.
But save the butts for later. And if you're trying to argue me out of it, I'll slug you. Hello, Colonel. I'm on my way home. Pretty fair blast off, and we're 20,000 miles out from the moon now. Oh, I left a little of the equipment behind. The next ship can pick it up. And I've got a passenger.
You mean that Russian?
Yeah. Seems the ship was wrecked, so I talked him into coming back with me. He's down back in the galley fixing lunch now. I guess we'll both be called traitors for saying it, but we've sort of become friends. And he doesn't think Russia ought to claim the moon either.
Well, we have one distinction anyway. Maybe a Russian ship was the first to get to the moon, but it was an American one that made the first successful round trip.
I like to think of it in a different way. Not an American ship or a Russian ship. Stuff like that shouldn't matter anymore. Call it a ship from Earth. Yeah. Novikov and I started out separately, but we're coming back together. The first expedition from Earth to Moon is coming home.
To man, of course. To mankind. You know, Earth is really a twin planet. No other planet we know of has a moon that's practically as big as the planet itself. The moon is Earth's smaller sister. And it, like the Earth, belongs to man. We earned it. We worked for it. For 3 billions of years, we have been evolving and struggling and growing. The next growth is out to the moon. We're on our way.
Exploring Tomorrow on Tuned to Yesterday, an episode heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System on the 22nd of January, 1958. And so ends this hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.